good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence is an annual global campaign spanning 16 days from November 25th, which is the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, until December 10th, which is Human Rights Day. Now, the question we want to ask during this campaign period is, how committed is Malaysia to ending violence against women and girls? Let's ask our guests tonight. First up is Daniela Zulkifli, who is president of the Association of Women Lawyers. Dani, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I'm wondering if you can begin by sharing with us, you know, from a legal perspective, what aspects of violence against women are legally recognized and addressed, and on the flip side, which are the ones that may be overlooked or under addressed within the legal framework?
Hi, Melissa, and thanks for inviting me to speak on this issue. When we talk about a legal perspective or violence against women, a lot of times we talk about physical violence, and that's the most easily recognized form of violence, and this could include domestic violence or abuse, or sexual assault, rape, and certain forms of sexual harassment. But there are laws that deal with this, but there are also certain overlooked or under-addressed areas. Not necessarily that they are not covered in legislation, but that often when we talk about violence against women, these areas are often overlooked. So this includes psychological abuse, or financial or material abuse, and financial and material abuse can also be a form of domestic violence. Modern slavery, discriminatory abuse or neglect or acts of omission. And I think actually, even if you were to look at some of the provisions in the law, for example, the Domestic Violence Act, although you can actually cover for psychological abuse, when you go and lodge a police report, for example, oftentimes the question that or the police usually look for evidence of physical violence, and so these are things that I think we can sort of improve on when it comes to enforcement or implementation of the law. Right. And then apart from that, there are also overlooked groups. So, and this could include, like, for example, if we talk about, domestic violence again, it doesn't cover non-spouse. So you have to be married. So that means the intimate partners are not covered. And also because our law also operates on a heteronormative framework, it doesn't include persons, like gender diverse people, for example. Diverse sexualities, and there are also issues when I think we hear a lot of cases about like domestic helpers, and while you can cover that under other forms of violence, these are people who are often they don't get enough attention, for example.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, of course, foreign spouses, where they're not citizens, there are also certain barriers that apply to them when we look at certain forms of violence.
Right. Thank you for raising all the different groups that may be kind of under or overlooked in terms of the legal framework when it comes to gender-based violence. Can I just focus on first the non-physical aspect of gender-based violence? I'm wondering, because you talked about physical, psychological, emotional, financial abuse, and I'm just wondering, what legal challenges are there that arise when we have to address non-physical forms of harm and abuse?
Sure. So there, obviously, when we talk about violence against women or gender-based violence, there's a lot, right? That's domestic violence and sexual harassment, sexual assault and all that. And depending on what is being complained of, you have to look at evidence, right? And so for example, if it's something that is non-physical that you can't see, like you can't see bruises, you can't see physical evidence, for example, then there could be challenges when it comes to like, how do you prove that something has happened? If we talk about psychological abuse, then that could be shown in the form of like, you know, evidence from experts, for example. But when you talk about, let's say, sexual harassment, and it was something that was said to you, then it becomes an issue of like, I said this person said that, right? And so there could be challenges when it comes to that. And what we usually tell people is that you need to, you know, make proper records, make sure that you note down what happened and speak to people, because the people that you speak to will be able to then corroborate what you have said.
Danny, does that in any way hinder women, survivors of gender-based violence, from seeking justice, from seeking redress? Is that one of the obstacles that women face when thinking about wanting to seek justice?
It is. That and coupled with you know, other factors, like you people don't believe you, for example, or you're being victim blamed, you know. It's already very hard to speak up when you've experienced violence. But on top of that, you then have to then prove, right, that this has actually happened to you. And in a lot of cases, survivors find it very difficult to speak up, because they feel like, what if people don't believe me? And then, you know, going back to the earlier question, another challenge is, if it's something that was done online, it can be difficult or costly to identify the perpetrator, because sometimes, you know, people are very clever in, like, you know, masking the identity. I mean, you can do investigations and all that, but it's a time consuming process. And it's a lot harder, right? You need authorities to help you with that. You also need support. And the thing is that when you speak up and you want to complain, you want to ensure that the survivor's privacy is protected, that the safety is protected, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want the person to be, you know, stalked or followed or threatened after that. And then, of course, there's the stigma with naming and shaming perpetrators, because, you know, you're bringing shame to this person. Or if it's someone who is well known, for example, then you have that issue where people say, oh, you know, but this person, it's impossible, you know, this person is a very well respected person in the community. So these are some of the challenges that a survivor may face.
Right. You also mentioned groups that have been overlooked, or marginalized groups, especially when it comes to legal redress for gender-based violence. How does intersectionality impact a woman's access to justice when they deal with gender-based violence? I'm thinking all more than just cultural prejudices, but everything from the awareness, limited awareness about the rights and how our laws may not be gender sensitive. How do you see intersectionality playing a part, coming into this?
Sure. Well, when we talk about intersectionality, we essentially need to recognize that different forms of discrimination interact and make it worse, make inequality worse. And this could include people who are refugees, or let's say asylum seekers, stateless people, because one, you don't even have that access in the first place. So even if there are laws that deal with, like, let's say, rape or sexual harassment or other forms of violence, the first barrier that you are going to have is access. And that is because you don't have that right, because you're not a citizen. It is more difficult for you. Two is, of course, we also hear cases about persons with disabilities, and then people who are gender diverse, for example. You already face certain stigma, and you know, when you lodge a report or complaint, there's always that question of, oh, but you know, you are questioned on your identity, for example. You are questioned mm-hmm. on or people don't take you seriously. And so we need to, when we look at laws, for example, or when we look at, you know, dealing with survivors, we need to understand that you need to tackle that disadvantage that certain groups may have, and not just say, okay, you know, one solution will fit all, because the reality is it doesn't.
I understand. So based on the work that you do, Dani, what would you like to see, you know, the realities, the situation on the ground, what would you like to see change? What changes are necessary, both legal interventions and beyond, to create this a safer environment for women and prevent violence and eliminate it in the long term?
One is, of course, law reform. I think we continuously, along with our sister organizations and in other groups within the gender equality advocacy group, we are constantly looking to looking at loopholes in the law, looking at how we can improve our existing laws to better protect survivors, and also, you know, to be balanced, right? Because you need to look at it. We also look at the application of the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, which, you know, really set out really important things, and unfortunately, our laws don't cover that enough. There are also systemic issues, for example, support services. When you lodge police report, when you try to get protection, for example, you are at risk of not getting the kind of support you need, or worse, you actually get victimized again because you have to tell your story again and again, and then you don't get the sort of, you know, counseling support or, like, you know, emotional support that you need. We also need sensitivity training, and I know that, you know, we already we have some of this happening in certain enforcement agencies, but it shouldn't just apply to specific units that are tasked with dealing with women and children. It should be applicable to all, because we make up half of the population, right? And we need everyone on board. We also need better data. And it needs to be regularly updated. It needs to be accessible. Sometimes it's very difficult for us to obtain statistics, for example, and public awareness, of course.
Daniela, thank you so much for speaking with me. Daniela Zulkifli from the Association of Women Lawyers. We're going to take a very quick break here and Consider This. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about Malaysia's commitment to ending violence against women and girls. This as we mark the global campaign of 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Joining us now is Shoshana Aga. She is the head of research at Women's Aid Organization, which is a nonprofit dedicated to supporting survivors of gender-based violence while advocating for societal change and women's rights. Shoshana, thank you for being on the show tonight. I was wondering whether you could begin our conversation today with maybe sharing the significance of the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. I'm wondering what the primary objectives of this campaign, because it's not just about awareness, it's also a call to action. Maybe you can tell us more.
Yeah. So, Melissa, the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence is really an annual international campaign. It stretches on for 16 days and it kicks off on 25th November, which is also the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. And it runs through till 10th of December, which is Human Rights Day. And I think these dates were intentionally chosen because it's to symbolically link violence against women and human rights, and you kind of emphasize that actually such a violation, violence against women is a violation of human rights.
Please continue. You wanted to add a little bit more?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's used, it was, you know, started up by activists from civil society organizations around the world who met at the Women's Global Leadership Institute in the US in 1991. But till today, it's used as an organizing strategy by individuals and organizations to call for the prevention and elimination of violence against women and girls.
Okay, so when we talk about gender-based violence, can you maybe describe a bit about how you observe the levels of awareness about the various forms of abuse that women and girls might encounter, especially if we're talking about gender-based violence that goes beyond physical violence?
Yes. I think while physical violence is a visible and often more recognized form of abuse, I think there is a growing understanding that gender-based violence also includes non-physical violence. And when I say non-physical violence, I mean emotional, psychological, verbal, economic, as well as sexual abuse. So while WAO in 2021, we carried out a study to kind of gauge what our Malaysians level of understanding about physical and non-physical violence. And what we found was interesting because we found that Malaysians had a relatively good understanding of what both physical and non-physical forms of violence constituted. So, physical violence was when we asked them whether, you know, slapping, pushing, smashing objects near an individual, whether these were physical violence, 94.1% respondents seem to have understood that. And when we talked about non-physical forms of violence, when we talk about controlling behaviors, financial abuse, stalking, cyber harassment, these forms of non-physical violence were slightly less understood, but 83.1% showed that they understood what this was. But the interesting thing, though, is that although Malaysians seem to understand at surface level what physical and non-physical violence is, they still exhibit attitudes that excuse perpetrators for violence or blame victims. So there seems to be a disconnect between understanding violence at the surface level and understanding what it looks like in context, because at the root of it really is that violence is a symptom of a balance of power, right? Balance of power, imbalance of power between perpetrator and survivor. And if you don't understand this at core, then you're going to miss out on all the other important aspects of, a violent relationship.
Right. So how do we educate the public about the kind of the core issues of gender-based violence, the power dynamics, the power imbalance? What challenges do advocacy organizations like WAO face when it comes to educating the public, so in context, as you say, so not just awareness, but understanding what gender-based violence looks like in context and the accountability for such?
Yeah, I think, for an organization like Women's Aid Organization, really changing people's mindsets is the number one task that we have to, deal with. And it's really difficult because of widely held attitudes that are so ingrained in our society that people think it's truth. For instance, when we asked Malaysians, why rape occurs, about 83% of respondents said it's because men are not able to control their desires, right? Or about 49% of respondents said it's because of how women dress. So, these percentages are shocking, and it just goes to show that rape myths and the ideas, these ideas that, that blame the survivor for rape that happens are so ingrained in our society. And it really, there needs to be a really concerted effort to kind of actively challenge these ideas within our society. And, you know, it has to happen through a very systematic plan, a national action plan against violence against women, for instance, that includes, you know, a very comprehensive comprehensive and multi-layer effort. Lah. Yeah.
All right. So can I ask, what does that look like to actively challenge those kind of long-held mindsets? And when you talk about the plan, I think of like a top-down approach. Is that the best way to change or to educate and change these mindsets?
Well, a plan can be it can be a strategic plan. It can be a plan that is that encompasses all layers of society, all sectors of society, but the people who are executing it need not necessarily be from the top down. You know, it can be from the bottom up as well, and I think that's really the best approach. You know, it's a consultative process that, you know, requires consultation with all sectors of society, and to really underscore the point that violence against women is wrong and that it is not inevitable, it is preventable. You know, so there needs to be this echoing of the same message at many different layers, but it has to happen comprehensively, systematically, and, you know, all together at once. Yeah.
That was kind of touching on the advocacy work that WAO does. Can I also ask about the survivor support work that your organization focuses on? What would you say are some of the primary obstacles that women face when trying to seek justice or trying to seek support after they've been affected by gender-based violence?
Mm-hmm. So I think when it comes to survivors accessing support, there are many barriers. One of the main barriers that we come across are, you know, that survivors often face victim blaming attitudes from perhaps frontline officers who are meant to deal and respond to survivors. And this is really disheartening because it really affects survivors' help seeking journeys. It affects them and the possibility of them coming out and searching for help. We've seen this, and another major factor is that sometimes survivors don't really know where to go for help. They're like, how come I didn't know about this before? Oh, you know, what really needs to happen is for us to really publicly declare or announce to people what are the procedures and where they can go to when they need help. You know, what are the kinds of help they can get? Where are the shelters? Where are the, you know, where are the one-stop crisis centers in hospitals? So they need to have a very clear picture of what kind of support they can get. And I think that's not there right now. And that this kind of fuels the hesitancy of survivors to leave their abusive situations, especially when they're not clear on what's possible.
Right. So the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence isn't just about, you know, calling for increased awareness or for us to educate ourselves, but also kind of a call to action, right? So that we achieve this goal of preventing and eliminating violence against women. Can I ask you what you would like the audience to, what message you'd like to leave with the audience tonight to spur them into some kind of action to mark the 16 days of activism?
Yeah, I think when we talk about violence against women and when we talk about women, we're not just talking about urban women. We're talking about all kinds of women, rural women, women with disabilities, women who are non-citizens, refugees, migrant workers, all types of women, because we all women face the same issues, really. But, you know, of course, you know, with their vulnerabilities then make them more susceptible to certain violence. So I think, you know, we really need to put our heads together to not work in silos, but really to work together to end violence against women, because it is preventable.
Shazana, thank you so much for joining me on the show. Shazana Agave from Women's Aid Organization, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.